The ACN podcast is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners and sponsors, including the Agile Alliance. As a nonprofit membership organization, the Agile Alliance is an excellent resource to help you along your Agile journey. To learn more about the Agile Alliance and our other sponsors, as well as how you can become a sponsor or supporter of our show, please visit acnpodcast.org for more information. And thank you for your support. Good morning and good evening, everyone. This is the Agile Coaching Network. The Agile Coaching Network is brought to you by Agile Alliance. If you're not familiar with who Agile Alliance is, we're a nonprofit organization that's been in existence since the founding of this whole Agile movement. Go to agilealliance.org. That's where you can find out more information about programs that we're running and things that your membership that enables us to do things like the Agile Coaching Network and other initiatives that we help our members to go off and better this thing called Agile. This is the last episode of the year. I'm kind of sad overall for that because we've had, I think, a tremendous year. I looked at the stats and the numbers on the podcast. We are at the verge of going over 50,000 replays. And that could not have happened without everyone that's in this community. I've appreciated all the feedback over the year. I think that as I look forward to coming into 2020, which seems strange to say, hopefully we can only continue to improve and grow this community that we've started. And I'm sort of getting choked up a little bit just because of the fact that this has just been a great time for me. And I think it's been a great time for others who've joined us. One other thing, if you guys haven't looked at it yet, we do now have a new website up on the agilecoachingnetwork.org, which is a vanity URL that'll take you over to the Agile Alliance site. Couple thing to note is we are now syndicated on just about every podcasting service that there is. So if you miss an episode, you can, on more than likely, wherever it is you get your podcasts, you could subscribe to it now directly from the Agile Alliance site. And you can see the past episodes guide there. You can also see pictures of me and as well as some of the regulars that are on the show. One thing to note now also is we're starting to also transcribe those. The transcription service is not exactly perfect, but overall, as I read back through the transcripts of the previous episodes, it's pretty cool to actually be able to go back. And if you're more of a reader than you are a listener, it's a good place to actually to kind of catch up a little bit on the things that we're doing. So to start off, at the Agile Testing Days event over in Germany, and I had somebody walk up to me and we had a really nice conversation about the stuff that they'd learned at the event. And the person said, you know, as soon as I get back, I'm going to go ask my manager whether or not I can implement some of the stuff that I learned. And that actually had me kind of taken a little bit back. And we had a much deeper conversation about what it is to be agile and what it is to actually, regardless of agile, this whole notion of why do people seek permission to improve themselves or their work or even the product that they're working on. And it always kind of shocks me that when somebody goes off, and as an example, when we do story points or we do some sort of estimation process, that we tend to yield towards the bare minimum to get the thing out versus the fact that, no, I'm also going to improve something along the way, or I'm going to give myself some time to really learn and do this thing correctly and right. And as you guys know, and I won't read through all of the things that Agile empowers people with, but if you go look into not just the manifesto, but into the principles, there are a number of different principles there that says that, you know, anything from trusting people to get their job done correctly to, you know, paying continuous attention to the excellence that we bring into our work, and also reflecting and really adjusting our behavior as we go along the way. So the discussion that I'd like to talk about, just to kick everything off, is why ask permission to go improve? And as us being leaders with the community, because there's a number of us that are in leadership positions, and I challenge anyone to say that you're not in a leadership position in the company that you're in, regardless of level, how do we help to facilitate and to help people to treat them like adults and really reinforcing the empowerment that they have? And Jorg, would you like to take a stab at this first?
I'd love to. So one thought that immediately comes to my mind is an experience we had together at a bigger company where you once said to me, why do you ask permission? If it's not forbidden, just do it. And if you're sure it's the right thing, just go ahead. And that's something I've now for some time told to a lot of people. And a lot of people react like exactly the conversation you explained. But to me, this just works because people are surprised by positive results and will notice them. And if you ask permission, they all start to fear. But to the why, I think that's just because we're so used to things that are forbidden and that we are challenged about and the drudgery of every day. So just be safe. So I think there are a lot of, I'm just used to it and either I'm in my comfort zone or it's too risky to learn. So what should we do as leaders? Make that learning possible. First of all, recognize people who just improve. Say that's a good step and do the small things. Recognize that something has improved in a retrospective. Get that culture in that people start to see this. And one question I like to ask is, did we only do good because we were lucky or did we really do it on purpose? It's a good challenge, I think.
Help me with this. So I told you that how many years ago? I'm just curious.
How many years is it? It was either end of 2012 or 2013.
Wow. So. I'm honored that that had such a large impact on you, man.
And not only me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Hendrik, what do you think?
Yeah, I acknowledge totally what Jörg is saying. Better ask for forgiveness than for permission. That's maybe a good rule when you're in the old state and when you want to learn something new, a new kind of behavior. But I would like to also address another problem that I've seen now a couple of times. And that is, there is this narrative of the evil command and control manager that we are all the time discussing. And because we are discussing this, we are creating command and control managers in our heads. So I think a little part of that problem might also be because we are creating the idea of the command and control manager, and we are empowering that idea. So an example, I mean, when I want to change something in our company, I use my brain, like Jörg was also indicating. I mean, I think, okay, is this for the benefit of myself or the benefit of the organization? And I, of course, involve in when I drive an improvement, I involve those people who are affected or impacted. And sometimes my manager is affected because he's orchestrating some work or has a certain thing. So, of course, I talk to that person. But this is more a conversation and not necessarily asking for permission. But the narrative tells us, managers are command and control, so it's always a permission thing. So now, I think there is a psychological effect here that we should not underestimate.
And what's that?
Yeah, that we think that all managers are command and control, but I think you would be surprised how many managers are there who are just okay with you taking initiative.
But do you think that in that context, I mean, you know, having been a manager for a number of decades, that it's important for the manager to step forward and to clarify exactly what somebody is asking of them? Because I've had multiple times where somebody will come up to me and I'll ask them, are you asking for my opinion or are you asking for my permission?
Uh-huh.
And what I find is that, and you know, back to York's comment about the way that I impacted him a number of years ago, is that, you know, I will purposely tell people that, hey, look, it's your job to improve yourself. It isn't my job to go off and do that. That's always curious to me that somebody would. Maybe you're right. We're always painting in the context of putting people into a position where they shouldn't be.
Yeah. See, you have exactly this experience. I have also been a manager, and people came to me much more often asking for permission than I thought they need.
Interesting.
You have the same experience. You wonder, hey, and I tell you, you just go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Go ahead and see what happens. And then if you want, you can review the stuff with me. I'm cool with that. Damien, what do you have?
Well, I think this is just a fascinating question because I run into the same issue, whether it's kind of at the team level from an iteration or, you know, a sprint. And there's that pressure to, we need to produce outputs, right? Functioning code or whatnot in a software environment. But just overall in general, this culture that we always fight of, it's easy to keep doing the same thing you've always done. And that pressure of, hey, I want to take personal time to improve. And we all know that's the long-term benefit. That's how the entire company improves. But it's just so hard to sometimes break that culture. for like an older company, especially. So I find that to be a big challenge. It's hard to change process and just have that culture of, look, we're adults, kind of like you said, and mm-hmm. part of our job is to improve our passion and our process and all those wonderful things. But it just seems like there's that pressure of delivering.
And I agree with that. And have you taken steps in your company, though, to, you know, from a reinforcement perspective, have you tried to help people to understand their empowerment?
The current company I'm at, I'm kind of more of a product owner role. And so it's important for me to, my response is always try it, you know, and not fill up the sprint with just kind of a death march mentality, right? But really just leave slack in there and encourage people to try new things. And then when they fail, celebrate that as well. It's kind of like the Google approach of, you know, we celebrate our failures, quote unquote, because right. It's just part of the learning process. And that's what we're here for, is to learn and inspire each other.
Awesome. Rajesh.
Yeah. I feel this culture happens when we do it on a daily basis, our habits, our disciplines every day, how we behave, how we model our behavior, that when you add it up over a period of time, it becomes a culture and a way of doing things, a habit. And as coach, I feel I try the most at most to make this to my scrum masters, how we can encourage, engage, enable, and then empower our team members, particularly those who are not so open about it or in that rut of asking permission, and being open with them and encouraging them with various ways. Like in retros, I could come up with different games, daily stand-up, reward them who volunteers, you know, bringing some ideas, maybe hand over a nice book about someone who's contributing to ideas. That will make people open up. Do I strive it? I still find it's always an improvement, which is never perfect, is a verb rather than being a state. We're trying to be better and better, but often sometimes I feel there could be still something left. So that's one of the ways that I have tried. Maybe there are many more ways I would wish to learn from all of you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Chris, what do you have?
Hi, everybody. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are. So my name is Dr. Chris Lee, and I'm fascinated with this conversation. It's my first time on one of these calls, so thank you. The question when it comes up about why people seek permission for things that we don't quite understand why feel that way, I do think it's a cultural dimension of many organizations, and it's also, I'll say, clearly defined roles around decision making. Decision making in organizations seems to be sort of informal and ad hoc sometimes, and I do think understanding the parameters in which people can make decisions about certain things, or maybe about certain budget amounts, certain levels of effort, that type of thing. If those are better defined, people have an easier time moving within those parameters. So I think there's some organizational work that would facilitate more a free feeling of, you know, people trying new things. And you know, we're talking about creating environments of innovation. Those are just a couple of thoughts that are in complement to what I've heard so far.
Leaders in a company, we are setting enabling constraints, basically. We are setting the frame within which people can operate. And the clearer we are about these frames, and as much as wide as we can make them, that enables safety of taking own initiative.
And I think I mentioned this on a previous episode, but you know, we had a culture of you know, we would go through and do a budgeting process, and we would get approvals, and each of our managers would get the known amount of money that they had to spend in the next year. And I was always shocked that throughout the year that they would come back, managers would come back to me and ask permission again to continue to spend the money that they've already been approved for. And it is even within boundaries that we set. Sometimes I think that older cultural norm of, maybe I've gotten in trouble before, you know, and I don't want to get in trouble in the future. I'm not sure where some of that comes from. Darius.
Well, you know, the culture is a complex phenomenon. And I think there are multiple contributing factors to the why question. And one of them, probably prevailing factor, is historical. The way we run companies is modeled after, you know, Frederick Winslow Taylor tradition of decomposing things into subsystem optimizing and making this into a well-oiled machine. This is how military works. This is how military officers who were employed by industry in America and all over the world formed the culture. This is command and control. And no matter how you slice this, this was not always like this, but this is a relatively recent phenomenon, the last 120 years. And before that, people self-organized. And today, I believe we are discussing it, we are feeling both starvation, pressure, that this is inadequate. And military knows it. The military already revamped that. I know you probably know the term VUCA, right? Mm-hmm. In the too quickly changing volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity environment, command and control is vastly inadequate. It will prevent you from reaching your goals. So we feel the stress already, the starvation and the pressure. We did not make a paradigm shift. And some companies which did that, they switched completely towards self-organizations, they don't even have to consider this question.
Interesting. So do you find that sometimes we speak purely from a Western lens when we talk about this culture? Do you think that, say, this is a problem that it would exist, say, in, Scandinavian and Norwegian countries versus further down in the European Union or other countries? Or do you think it's just widely systemic to the whole area, everything?
Well, that's a really good question, right? Because I think Scandinavia is a phenomenal place where things are different. Even though it's a Western culture, it's vastly different because they do experiment lively on self-organization. But I would say that even Asian countries, China and others, they rely heavily on the colonized mindset, which is really command and control. The well-oiled machine. In fact, it's not a well-oiled machine. We have to shift our thinking from this to the ecosystem, which is resilient. And the resilience in the fast-changing environment of VUCA world can only be handled with distributed cognition. You don't have enough fast managers to do that. But if you distribute cognition, people can self-organize in smaller groups. They will have solutions before you know that you have a problem.
Well, thank you for that. Randall, what do you have?
Yes, one thing that I would like to bring out, and I think especially when you have organizations that follow certain frameworks, and I don't want to go into that conversation, but so many of the roles and responsibilities are clearly defined. And in some cultures, in some organizations, people don't want to step outside of that definition. Oh, that's not my role. That's not my this or that. And I think that if we can break those down, and I'm not a big fan of those clearly defined roles and responsibilities, because it's kind of like that that one movie, it was the cartoon Robots, where it's you see a need, fill a need. And that's the type of attitude and culture I would like to see. But sometimes when you have these, some of these corporations, the roles are so clearly defined that people are afraid to step outside of those boundaries.
And do you think that contributes to more of a learned helplessness within the organization? Because
definitely.
I've seen many a time where there's a problem right there. I mean, you don't need me to go set up a meeting and be the program manager for that. Anyone could be the program manager for that to go get that fixed.
Exactly.
This is a very fascinating topic and actually very close to my heart also. Instead of mandating the transformation, we actually invited folks to join the transformation. So, because when based on all the conversations that have happened before me here, one thing I've noticed is the mandatory approach where, like, you know what, we're doing transformation, everyone fall in line. That's most of the aspects that management would start with. And what happens is they don't fall in line. They just ask everyone else to fall in line. Mm-hmm. And what happens is basically the same thing. The whole command and control, they do it half-heartedly. All the teams and everyone go through the transformation, but the management still sticks the same way, and they're still sitting in their ivory tower, so on and so forth. So the way we did it is we actually invited everyone to an invitation-based approach. Come try it out. If it works for you, then you can become our champions. Take the information elsewhere. I can go in detail, but I don't want to. If you have any questions, I can.
No. I think it's really good, and I think what I've learned, at least in doing transformations, that you know, first starting off with informing people about what we're doing, what our expected goals are, what the business reason for that, and then coming back through and asking who wants to help, you know, enlisting yes. people to the cause was a far better way of doing transformation than just the beat the person over the head and saying, you know, I think we did it a couple episodes back where we just said, your favorite color is blue, and I hope you like blue, because it's now that's your color. And we just need to, I think, in that empowerment wise, and getting back to our topic here, treating people and empowering them to now embrace that, I think, is part of what, you know, leadership's about.
Absolutely. I'll just add one thing. I give the example of the movie Remember the Titans. In that movie, it's actually, they make it so they don't invite everyone. They invite few folks. They actually become the champions. They empower themselves. And while doing that, everyone else who was sitting in the sidelines, who were not actually consciously contributing, they started contributing also. And that's mm-hmm. the mindset I always try to embed when we do the whole coaching aspect.
That's wonderful. Jonathan, what do you have?
Yeah, so I wanted to add to that. Because oftentimes I'll see that companies say that they'll empower the teams, empower the people. But as soon as a decision is made, as soon as that person who's given that empowerment makes a decision, and it's not exactly how the manager wants, then instead of celebrating the learning experience, they're celebrating the failure. They come down with like a punishment, or they come down very hastily on the person, and which gives that culture of fear again. Mm-hmm. Now that person doesn't want to make a decision because they don't want to be reprimanded.
Right. And that's a tough position to be in. I remember having a manager, he managed with fear. And I remember one time he asked me, could you give me honest feedback about my job performance? And I said, do you really want me to give you an honest feedback of your job performance? And he said, yes. And I said, okay. And I laid it out for him. And he stood up and he pounded his hands on the table. And he said, you know, you're wrong. You know, and let me tell you all the reasons why you're wrong. And he kept going on for at least 20 minutes. And then afterwards, I said, I'm never giving you honest feedback ever again. That's it. You know, it's... Have you seen that?
Yes. That's the crazy part, because they want you to be transparent, but if you give them feedback that they don't agree with, then you know you're made to feel ashamed that you don't agree with them, or you're not saying what they were expecting to hear. Right. And again, that just turns off the trust. It turns off the safe space.
And what I've told managers before a lot of times is if you're accepted, you have to be prepared for the feedback that you're about to get. And I've had many people come in and says, can I give you feedback on something? And I'll say, you know, right at this particular point, my mood for whatever, I may have came out of a budget meeting, I might have came off from some you know, big, hairy technical problem that we were dealing with. And I've told people, I said, I'm not ready for this conversation, right? Can we do this tomorrow? That would be a better time for me. And I think more people need to control their, you know, you own your response to things. And so if you're not ready for a conversation, you know, put it off. But also, if you invite people to ask for the feedback, you've got to be careful.
Responsibility is the ability to respond. And if exactly. you're not able, you better don't.
Absolutely. Matthew.
There are a few things, I mean, there are a lot of things that people said that are really interesting, but weaving together a few of them, I think it's clear that sometimes learning is constrained either explicitly by, say, management in general, or manager saying, you know, you can't have that time, or implicitly by the culture. But my company actually is sort of the opposite extreme, where leadership is all but begging people to take time to learn. And in thinking about this topic, as people, you know, bring up their various situations, it occurs to me that, you know, we have this problem where even when we make that space, when we give people permission, they're not taking advantage of it a lot of times. And so in looking at why that is, I mean, I think one thing is you have to make room, right? If you say, yeah, you can do all the learning you want, but then you make it so they have zero time to do anything, of course, they're not going to take that choice. But the other question is whether in terms of, is there some way to create pressure to induce learning, right? To say, hey, this is something you really need to do. So for example, if your manager takes responsibility for saying, hey, what are you learning? Where are you going? And really holds you to that, then I think that that can drive some of that learning. And it's a little bit of a question of, do you treat learning as sort of a perk, where you say, hey, it's the ping pong table, you can use it or not. If you want to learn, you can. Or is it something where you say, no, this is part of what we do here, and it is valuable not just to you, but to the company in general. And we're going to say, you need to do this work, and we're going to put in place incentives that drive pressure towards actually taking advantage of that learning, not simply saying, well, you can take it if you want it, but we're not going to really make room for it. We're not going to hold you to it.
Interesting. You know what? I think if you look at, the review and stacked ranking and all of the other mechanisms we've had for, centuries, it seems like, that I think is one of those things where we're trying to at least motivate people from where you're at in the job ladder. And if you want to get higher, there's these boundaries you have to go through. But what I find is that there's certain people within the environment, they're perfectly fine with where they're at. And they may have family at home, or they might have other things, and they're just content with what they're doing. I found that, at least from what triggered this question for me, was here was a person legitimately wanting to go off and change, but they felt that they were blocked because of somebody else or because of company rules. And that to me signaled that, in two halves of that coin, one half of that coin is maybe your company is oppressive. And if you want to go learn, maybe you need to go join a different company, or you really don't want to do it. And you're just using that as an excuse, hopefully that wasn't the case. And if that person's listening, I'm open to further conversations on what we talked about. Well, it looks like we are going off to the main questions. And the top question up here is, in Agile transformations, have you used different frameworks based on the nature of the team? As an example, product and platform teams use Scrum, and service-based type projects, do you use Kanban? Hendrik, would you like to start off this one?
The answer is yes.
Hold on, let me get my little check mark box.
Okay. Why is the answer yes?
And done. Okay. Next question.
So why is the answer yes? Agility is about the ability to use the right approach in the right situation. Yeah, and the two of us, Ray, had this discussion a couple of times about capital A Agile and small A Agile. Yeah. So is it Agile in the name of Scrum only, or you use your favorite scaling framework or whatever, or is it about agility? And more, as you mature more and more in our Agile journeys, it's much, much more about agility, which means everything needs to be fit for purpose. So if you're in the very front end with high uncertainties in the work that you are doing, you are, for example, having a new business idea and you are exploring now is there a customer, how to address them, how can we earn money with this? In high levels of uncertainty, you better use something like design thinking. When you have a product and you iteratively want to add features incrementally and learn your way forward, Agile and Agile practices like Scrum are extremely helpful. Then when you are more having something like routine work, and I think service-based is very much in this way, there's not so much uncertainty and you can start making the flow optimal. So there Kanban-based systems work.
Right.
So it's a fit for purpose question. And,
And I fully agree with that. I mean, what I look at is how much do we know about the product or the feature or the thing that we're trying to go off and do? And when you think about service-based businesses, even in service-based, you know, types of issues, the complexity of what's coming in could be a higher complexity than you might have knowledge on. So yes, Kanban might be a better choice, but I would even think that in the Kanban model, you know, safe to fail experimentation with some sort of tracker, some sort of mechanism that I can know where the status is at is good. But yeah, would I go pick Scrum for, you know, paint the world with it? Absolutely not. I think that even in products and platforms, early ideation phase, I don't have enough information to write a user story. And as you know, a user story is required in order for me to do a planning meeting. And if I can't get through the planning meeting, because we're all just saying, hey, that's going to be another spike, another spike, another spike, another spike, I have no control over my system at all.
Allow me to add something to link this to the last question. I actually prefer if the team understands what it's asked for and picks the method. So I was very happy to have a team tell me Scrum doesn't fit because we're anyway stuck with the scope. So let's get through this fast and in good quality and stop doing scope discussions that lead nowhere because competition is ahead. And so we have to do it.
You mean take it to the team and ask them?
They actually decided to tell me that they wanted to change the method. I didn't even have to ask them. They were smart enough to notice that they were spending things in a way that something else would be more suited. So they switched from Scrum to Kanban.
And they were asking you for permission or what?
No, actually, they were just telling me that that was their way. They asked me for advice.
I was just joking, referring to the last question.
yes, I just wanted to underline it.
Yeah, just want to make sure you weren't putting yourself in that control area.
So this question is quite literally the $1 million question. And that's literally how big management companies like McKinsey and all make their money in the name of transformations. Sorry, I said that loud. The aspect here is actually more of lean agile transformation. The question is, are you following? Do you actually understand the values of the lean agile transformation? Do you understand the principles, the values that you're getting out of it? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? Scrum, Kanban, Scrumban, or safe, yes, I know for some that's a bad word, but safe or less or whatever it is. There's so many different frameworks available in the market, but they all serve different purposes. We can't say like, you know, we're going to only use this because that suits us better. It's more in terms of what suits the environment, what suits the teams and the team members. I think it was Jorge, if I'm pronouncing your name incorrectly, but I like his approach. It's mm-hmm. It's the whole shoe hari aspect of it. Where the shoe is basically the first aspect. Where is the team? Let's invite them and understand where they are and where they want to head. And then we experiment a little bit in the ha and the ri aspect. And then it could be a merge of all these different frameworks. It doesn't matter. It's all about, are we able to provide value or not?
Right. I agree with that. And Rajesh, what do you have?
Yeah. On the same lines, I feel that different teams have different needs based on what information they have, what decision they can, how much planning they can do. If they can't, then Kanban is quite good enough to just go with the flow of requests and keep servicing them. Whereas some teams have to do a lot of planning. They need to consult on estimates and stuff like that. So it all based on the need of the project. And yes, definitely we have to keep on adapting based on which platform serves the best, whether Scrum, Kanban, or Scrumban, or whatever. And as we go along, sometimes we may borrow some of the best practices. There is no best practices, what is good for the team, which can be borrowed and done partially and so on. I know we shouldn't be doing Scrum, but often something which is more useful, we can do more of that and less of something. So sometimes we have been doing some implementation of Scrum, which is not really ideal of Scrum, but it has been doing more like Kanban, doing less of planning, even though we do planning, but it's not really Scrum. But we have to go along with the attitude, the environment, and the need of the project.
Thank you for that. David, what do you have?
When people say framework, they kind of forget what that means, right? And it means do what makes sense. So the way I explain any kind of framework, be it Scrum or Safe or DAD or Less or whatever, or Nexus or whatever, is it's like playing chess. First, you have to learn the rules of the game, which is how you move the pieces, right? The knight makes the little L and the bishop goes diagonal and the queen does whatever she wants. But once you understand how to play the game, how you play the game is completely up to you. Mm-hmm. So you put in what I call the guardrails, right? That, you know, okay, you should probably sprint. When a team that's sprinting comes to me and says they want to do a Kanban, I ask them why. And the invalid answer is because we don't like Scrum. Right?
Right.
The proper answer is do what makes sense for the team. Now, some teams are more event-driven. Kanban makes sense for them. But some teams need to really understand the frameworks they're in and how to get better at it, as opposed to, you know, changing things. So, yes, we use different frameworks based on the nature of a team, but also the requirements of the business, too. So you have to keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with both of those. I think that a lot of times when people come up to me and they say that they hate a particular framework or the framework's not working for them in a particular way, and I ask them, well, what are the alternatives? What do you want to do? I've had some people say, we want to go back to the old way. But what I found was is that the old way was no framework, no methodology at all. And so to me, that's unacceptable. It's more or less, how do you go and arrange your work in a way that's most effective? And I think you hit it on the head, which is not just what's good for me, but it's also what's good for my customers as well. Jonathan, you've had your hand up for a little bit. What do you have?
Yes, I wanted to also kind of add, and I guess this kind of shows my geek side. But when you look at the Star Trek world,
oh yeah, they always let's
have this
go.
Prime directive. They always have this prime directive for like cultures that are people that they came across that wasn't technologically advanced, wasn't ready for that next level. They weren't going to introduce that technology to them. So as much as I do not desire Safe, there are places for organizations that are trying to get between that management can't fully trust their employees because their employees just doesn't show that discipline, doesn't show that responsibility to be empowered. That Safe kind of adds that middle layer. I don't think that, you know, it allows them to really experience the whole agile experience. But yeah, I do agree that there's a time and place for each framework, as well as some cases, you know, you may want to prefer waterfall, especially if it's a labor intensive product that you're producing.
How about just use waterfall with the agile principles? And I bet you waterfall is going to be a lot nicer. So shall we pivot from this question? Are there any other comments on this? Okay, let me go ahead and we have another assessment question here. How do you assess agile maturity? Jorg, you want to take that one?
Yeah, my reflex was to say just by the age of youth, but only with a smile. No, actually, the best thing is self-reflection, I think. And if self-reflection says there's a way where we want to go, that's probably the best maturity you ever can get, being ready to do the next thing. There's nothing like perfection. And if you recognize that there's something that you can improve, want to improve, are curious for, then that's part for the next step. Why care for maturity? What do you want to measure with that? The only thing is, if you meet new people and want to know their experiences, talk to them, ask what they think, what they've seen, and learn.
That sounds good. Matthew, you have your hand up.
This is largely a restatement of what was just said. I mean, oftentimes when people say they're embarking on what we call an agile transformation, they say, oh, we want to go agile. My first question is why? I often cringe a little bit. So I'm like, what is it you're hoping you're going to get? And to me, the maturity question is a similar one in that I would say, what is it you're going to get out of that information? What if I tell you you are mature, you're 8 out of 10 or a 2 out of 10, what are you going to do with that information? If the answer is, you know, that you're going to pat yourself on the back, then I say, well, you need other reasons to pat yourself on the back. To me, it really lies in the relative question, right? When you embark on an original agile transformation, the reason hopefully is because you hope to improve something. There's something that you don't like currently that you want to make better, or something that maybe you like okay, but you want to like it even more. So you're going in a direction. And I would say that even after you've adopted Agile, the question of maturity really is about, you know, do you want to be more, do you want to go further in this direction? Do you want to expand? Do you want to improve in this area? And that should be the focus is where do you want to go from where you are? But really, if anyone asks that question, I would say, what are you going to do with the answer to that question? Like, what is it going to serve? And because I think that in the answer to what someone would do with the Agile maturity score or data is going to be some really telling sense of whether it's actually a valuable thing to measure.
I agree. What I found in most businesses that I've walked into and asked the question, what do they want to accomplish? You tend to sometimes get this robotic answer, I want to be agile. And well, no, what do you want to accomplish? Well, I want to be agile. Now, what business goals are you trying to go achieve by doing the agile transformation itself? And to me, the maturity is buried in maybe some of the shortcomings that you might already have with your customer delivery today, or maybe your employee satisfaction, or your go figure out what this bigger global goal that you're trying to go change, which is, you know, how am I improving people loving and falling in love with my products? And employees falling in love with working at this place, you know, those are all the key things. Raven, what do you have?
I have a question actually, in regards to your response when you say, you know, why do you want to go agile? What would be your response if a person said and answered your question, say, the reason why I have to go agile is because my manager stated that all 15 of my teams have to go agile, and if we don't do it effectively, that it could impact my raise.
Ooh, that I do not like the framing of that at all. I think leadership, and this is another thing, if we've got people who are in leadership positions on the call, you need to really frame this in the elevator pitch of the business goal that you're trying to go accomplish, which is, we are moving this way because of a competitive threat, because our competitors are they're working in an agile way and they're cleaning our clock or whatever the urgency that you want to go push onto it, so that people feel that urgency is something that they can take up as a goal. But if you put it in, bury it in the, you know, you're not going to get a raise. Oh my. That really is troublesome. Hendrik, have you ever done that?
All the time.
I hope not, man. Jonathan.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I worry, even when people ask, you know, what's your velocity? It's like you guys had said before, what are you going to use this for? Are you going to weaponize it? Are you going to, you know, use it for people's reasons to increase their salary? Or are you really trying to improve yourself? And I can't remember who said it just previously, but doing retrospectives or having the team do self-checks, you know, where were we 2 sprints from today? Mm-hmm. You know, what was our goals? Did we set to improve? Did we accomplish that? To me, that is the better assessment than trying to use some type of maturity model.
So, the question, how we assess agile maturity, is this a question about tools or people?
It's
about people.
You think it is? Okay, go ahead.
I think it is, because what happens is without people, you don't have anything, right? And if it is about people, my question would be, how do you assess the maturity of an adult? Does it really even make sense? I don't think it does, because, you know, you may have an adult who will at times behave like a child, cracking jokes, which will be completely appropriate, right? Talking about movies, play, etc. So does it lower the maturity? I think that is, like some people suggested, really the issue of, are we satisfying the way we are delivering? Does it really, do we harvest what we potentially can, or are we stuck?
As humans, I think sometimes we want to seek conformity, and I also want to benchmark myself against others. Am I living up to something? And some people really thrive for having some form of reference. I mean, we went through a decade of CMMI and other assessment tools that were, in certain cases, inflicted on organizations. And my fear always when I see questions like, is there now suddenly going to be the next round of maturity models that are going to inflict things onto people where you pretty much snuffed out the fun on Agile and I don't like it anymore because all I keep getting is another assessment that's saying that I'm a 4 and I should be a 10, you know?
Yeah, and I know that you would agree with that, that you'd, all the models are wrong. Some of the models are useful.
Exactly.
So if I am measuring something because I want to check if my child has a fever, the measurement, the metric is useful. But the moment the metric becomes a target in itself, which I think everyone was referring to, it's useless, right? People are going to game the metric, and for what purpose do you use that?
Right.
And if I feel that I am doing what I can potentially, then I am satisfied. If I think we can do better or differently to deliver more, then we should go this route. And if we find a useful metric to check the temperature, I'm not going to deceive myself. What's the temperature of my child? It's useful.
Right. And I agree with that. Unfortunately, we are at the top of the hour. And this being the last episode until the new year, I'm just going to make a big, heavy sigh right there. I want to thank everyone for this year again. We've had, I think, a tremendous impact on a lot of people. I get a lot of comments via email. It's not just, you know, what the regulars and others that are on the show that do, that everyone who participates in this call, regardless if you add your voice to it or if you're just on there wanting to listen to this, we're making some differences within the greater Agile community. If you want to see me, I'm going to be over in December in Ericsson. I'll be hanging out with Hendrik over there. What are the dates on that, Hendrik? What are we, when are we going to be?
That's 13th, 14th, and 15th of December.
And we'll be in Stockholm.
Super cool Sweden, yes.
Yes, and so if you are in that area and you just want to hang out with us for a little bit, just reach out to me on my email and we'll get something going. After that, in February, I'm going to be over at Agile Today over in India. It should be, I think, a pretty cool event. I think I'm seeing the lineup. They haven't announced the actual schedule, but I got an early copy of it, and I think it's going to be a pretty cool event overall. And then after that, there's a chance that I'll be over at Agile India, and we'll be able to meet then. Also, if you guys didn't do this yet, the call for papers for Agile 2020 is now open. Please submit, get those in early. What I find is that, you know, they do get a tremendous amount of paper that come in, lots of great submissions, but get it in early so that, you know, you can get some consideration. They do provide you feedback on your submission so that if you want to modify it throughout open submission period, you can. And I know that also that registration is going to be soon open for that as well. With that, I would like to say to all of you, I hope you guys have a happy holidays, and I hope that you and yours have a great new year. This podcast is provided by Agile Alliance for educational and informative purposes only. To find out more information about the member-supported Agile Alliance, please go to
agilealliance.org to find out about more upcoming events, as well as different programs that are available to help you with your Agile journey.